You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Jeff and Eric were walking through the woods one night. That's right. When they saw something giving off an eerie light. So bright. Turned out it was an alien meteorite. That's right. And its radiation gave them superhuman insight. So bright.
And on that day, they vowed to use their powers for good instead of evil, swearing to protect mankind from the vile clutches of their evil arch-nemesis, Bad Cinema. And if you find yourself in a bind at the multiplex, not sure what to watch, you too can call on
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Aaron Snyder. The only movie podcast on the internet. I am your host, Jeff Bayer. Here is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's Jeff Bayer. We are brought to you by OneOfUs.net, and we are pleased to be here for episode 379 of Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder. We want to tell you a story of something that happened with the Summer Box Office Challenge. Which it's now all been resolved. All of the bets, everything involved with that has all been now taken care of.
It's all been taken care of, everybody.
Because you, Jeff, watched and recorded a commentary for Paul Blart: Mall Cop 2.
Which no one has listened to except for one person, and I really appreciate that. Thank you, everybody.
Several people have downloaded it.
Oh, they have?
Only one person has mentioned actually listening to it. but yes, we have that. You can get that for free. Go to moviebs.com, and there's a link in the sidebar. Get that free if you want to listen to it. And, of course, Jeff was a clown for a few days at Fantastic Fest.
I also dressed up like a clown.
Hey! And what was the other thing you had to do?
Not do a dance thing because we decided it was just too much.
That's right.
That's too much.
The dance thing, we called that because it was going to be too much of an ordeal, too much of an obligation. And so our
eyes were bigger than our stomachs on crafting these bets.
All summer long, people told us, wow, that is a lot of bets. That you should have spread that out. And they were right. And the other thing was that Jeff had to pay for me to get a 90-minute massage, which he was supposed to watch. Now, Jeff, tell them your idea that you had. It did not come to fruition, but we think you'll want to hear what almost happened.
All right. So first, I was like, Eric, why do I have to watch? And your rationale did make the tiniest sliver of sense. Your rationale was, but Jeff, if I was to lose, I would have to babysit your kids for 12 hours while you hung out at my bachelor pad and enjoyed the bachelor life. Mm-hmm. Oh, the amount of chicken wings.
Which would be not just the monetary expense of my giving up my time, but also would have had a stressful component of me actually being responsible for these children.
And therefore, not only should you be able to relax with a 90-minute massage, which was about like the price for a babysitter, a 12-hour, blah blah blah. It was then the idea of like, well, let's do something that would make you a little uncomfortable, Jeff.
Exactly.
And you were correct. It was something that like I just kept thinking like, well. So anyway,
that was the more important reason was that it was funny to think about. That was the whole idea was that it was a funny idea.
Right.
And so yes.
So the idea then I came up with was, well, my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, they own Milk and Honey Spa down in Austin, Texas. Fine establishment if you ever need anything.
If you ever need milk or honey, they got them both.
No. Actually, no.
No?
No. Massages, facials, blah, 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 blah.
All right.
Blah,
never
blah,
mind.
And so someone who does a little work for them. Was going to come. She was absolutely on board with this idea. She thought it was crazy, and she was like, "Sure, I'll do it." And it was to give you a massage in the lobby of the Alamo Drafthouse
during Fantastic Fest. Yeah,
because then I would see it. But then, haha, everyone has to see it. That was my twist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you proposed that to me, and I went along with it because that also sounded funny.
It sounded funny. And you had a surprising logic, which was, once the massage starts, I'm going to be in massage mode.
Yeah,
I'm
zoned out.
I
was prepared to put in earplugs if need be to cancel out the extra noise. I would have been into the zone. I would have been okay with it. Have been as comfortable had I been, you know, in the privacy of a massage room, but it would have been okay.
But then the PR person that is behind the festival, when I emailed her, she said, I'm sorry, very cordial, very polite. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, we don't have space for that. And as soon as she said no, part of me was like, I bet I can convince anybody of this. And plus it's a huge thing and I'll find a space. As soon as she said no, it was like a little bell went off in my head that was like, you know, this year in particular, maybe that wouldn't have been.
What with the climate of the times?
Climate of the times. And it was like everybody that knows you, everybody that knows us, everybody that knows the show, it would have been a hoot.
Right.
And for those that didn't, they would have been curious.
It would have been.
And potentially in the climate, it would have been a little bit weird.
The people who didn't know the context would have just seen a woman massaging a man in the hallway of the theater for no apparent reason, which would not have looked good in a week where we were debating issues of treatment of women and whatnot. I totally agree with that. I also, for the record, didn't think you'd be able to set it up anyway. I did not think the Draft House would go for it. As fun as they are, even in a normal year, kooky and fun, like they're all into kooky and fun when it's their own thing. When it's something I was figuring with us not being officially part of that, I didn't think they'd go for it. But
if we had done like a live podcast, if we had been ingratiated for a few years a little bit differently in the group, blah, blah, blah. But yes. Yeah. So thankfully, then Eric just pretty much stole some money from me. And that's the end of the story. And he says he got a massage.
I did. Because once that was off the table, once the public massage was off the table, then I started to think, you know, it has been a long year. And I would really like to just really enjoy a 90-minute massage. The other things, the clown and the audio commentary, those are funny things, but like they don't do anything for me. This was something I could actually enjoy and actually use, and I found out that a friend of mine who used to be a licensed massage person but then went off to do other things now was a licensed massage person again, so I was like, oh, I'm going to get him to do it, and I don't want Jeff there.
There's, I don't know if you guys couldn't see it, there was like, I don't know, 30 different air quotes with his whole story that he just...
No air quotes. You liar. But yeah, not for any prurient reason, but just I thought I will enjoy this more if Jeff's not there. And the fact is, it was always going to be a funnier idea than the execution. The idea of you having to watch the massage was always going to be funnier than the practical reality of, oh, well, now you got to sit there for 90 minutes and do what? Yep. And that's not... it's not like we're live streaming it. So,
the idea is... A 1 to 3 minute like thing.
Yeah.
Like that's how long you want it to be.
Having to commit to
it
for 90 minutes would have been overkill.
And then otherwise I would have been looking at my phone and
right. No fun for anyone.
Yeah. No.
So, but the massage has been accomplished and it was great. Thank you very much for paying for it.
And yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, as long as you're happy in the end.
Hi, Zoing. That's right. That's the reason I was disappointed it didn't work at Fantastic Fest, because I was looking forward to using my line that, like most things at Fantastic Fest, the massage would not have had a happy ending.
Mm.
But I didn't get to use the line. Oh, well. Harry Knowles ruins everything.
It really does.
Now, let's review some movies.
Yeah, you know why we have to do this, people? Because you guys didn't send in an iTunes review, which means we don't get to hear Eric's old-time radio voice.
So sad. Let's review a movie called Marshall.
We are
Marshall. We are not Marshall. Marshall was a high school. Was it a high school that they were called? Like they had a, what happened in that movie?
It's like, college.
College and the football team died in a plane crash or something?
Yes, and it's a true story.
Okay. Well, this is a different true story about a different Marshall.
It's a boat.
Mm-hmm. Thurgood Marshall, who eventually was the first black Supreme Court justice of the United States. But this movie is all before that, when he was just an up-and-coming lawyer.
The one lawyer who was fighting for discrimination for the NAACP.
Well, fighting against discrimination.
Again, that's true. He wasn't for it.
Yeah, from the NAACP. And
there's the twist.
Marshall is like a biopic, but it's not. It's the kind of biopic.
It's not.
And we both have an issue with this. It's the kind of biopic that just tells one story, just one incident from the person's life, as opposed to his whole life. And here's why I have mixed feelings about this. Because this movie was pretty entertaining, pretty interesting. It's a courtroom mm-hmm. thing, and those are fun. And I feel like a straight biopic of Thurgood Marshall probably would have been just a formula biopic where, you know, show him as a kid, having some hard times as a kid, and then struggling right. with this, and on. And it would have been, I probably enjoyed this more than I would have enjoyed the other thing.
But at least we would have understood why someone named him Thurgood.
Yeah,
which we didn't get.
This movie does not ever explain why he's called right. Thurgood.
I'm not asking for standard biopics. Here's what I'm asking. I'm asking you people that are in charge of choosing movie titles to do mm-hmm. a better job when it is a specific story about a person's life instead of the entire or almost the entire story of a person's life.
Because now that you've named movie Marshall, now if someone ever does do a whole biopic of Thurgood Marshall, the title's already taken.
Like, they have to then go, this is Thurgood Marshall's entire story. That's the name of that
movie.
Well,
the other one could be called Thurgood.
Yeah, it could be Thurgood.
Thoroughly Thurgood.
But like it's happened of late, and because my memory's poor, I can't tell you all the movies that have done it.
I remember being annoyed by this very recently that they had done a quote unquote biopic that was just one incident, and now I can't remember what movie it was.
You know how I think you take umbrage, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. When a song is used in the movie where somebody's listening to it, and then it turns out, no, 2 days later that song came out in real life. How dare this movie?
Right.
And you just burn that movie to the ground.
I do take umbrage with that, yeah.
Right. This is my umbrage. Mm. I get so annoyed with this. Like, Ali, when Will Smith played Ali, that was a specific story. That was not his entire life. And on and on and on and on and on. Don't be lazy with your titles.
I'll grant it, if the story that you're telling while not the entire story of the person's life, somehow is emblematic or somehow encapsulates the person's whole life, I would be okay with that. I don't think this does in Marshall. Right. I think it's one of many great things that he did. But all beside the point, because it's a pretty fun movie.
It is.
You know, it's 1941, and young Thurgood Marshall is going around the country basically helping out with these NAACP cases, defending defendants who he believes are only on trial because they are black.
Correct. The defendant must declare his or her innocence to Thurgood for him, and he looks you in the eyes.
Oh yeah,
very much like Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. He'll give you the eye look,
right?
And if you pass it, then he's on your team.
Yeah,
he will fight for you.
They're not trying to just go around and give every black man a lawyer. This is specifically people who are innocent. And he gets summoned up to Connecticut, Bridgeport, Connecticut, where a white woman, specifically Kate Hudson. It's not as herself. Yeah. Eleanor Strubing. Claims to have been raped and almost murdered by her Negro chauffeur / house servant. Negro and colored are the two words they use in.
That's right. Spell. I guess his full name is Joseph Spell. I only remember Spell.
It's called Spell. Yeah.
And that's Sterling K. Brown, recent Emmy winner Sterling K. Brown.
And Joseph says he didn't do it. And Thurgood, Chadwick Boseman plays Thurgood, by the way. And then his local, the Connecticut lawyer he's teamed up with, is played by Josh Gad, local Jewish lawyer.
Yeah, you need a local to make sure all the paperwork's in order and processing and just period. And then what they try to do is get Thurgood on the case.
Right. The crusty judge, James Cromwell, who's crusty and he's cranky, but he ultimately is mostly fair-minded, it seems.
Mostly.
He's a stickler for the law.
He enjoys nepotism because knows the other lawyer's dad.
Something like that, yeah.
And the other lawyer is Dan Stevens. He's everywhere.
Small
He's
Yankee everywhere, town.
Eric.
Oh, yeah,
Dan Stevens.
Judge rules that because there's no compelling reason for this lawyer, Thurgood Marshall, who is licensed in another state, there's no good reason to add him to this case. And so he says that he can be in the courtroom and advise Josh Gad but that Josh Gad has to do all the talking.
Yeah, and if he hears Marshall's voice, there's going to be trouble.
Yeah. Here's one thing that I'm a little disappointed in. That aspect of the case is not true. I looked up the real case, read a few accounts of it, and none of them mentioned this. There's one where Thurgood quotes Thurgood Marshall saying that he was glad to be trying a case in the North because it meant that he could walk into the courtroom without being in fear of his life and everything, but no mention of any about him not being able to speak or anything like that. So I think that was an artistic liberty.
I don't care for that artistic liberty at all.
I would like it better if that had happened. I wish that racist action had happened.
By the way, do you want to hear my James Cromwell story?
Please.
He comes on the screen, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, he's not dead. And then I was like, wait, no, I think maybe this is his last role. No, I don't think I remember any of this. And then I moved on.
Very good. He's still alive.
He is.
Got arrested recently for protesting something.
He's amazing.
I peed next to him at Sundance once, in the bathroom at Sundance. Yeah,
I feel like I'm gonna probably try to hug him before he or I die. I feel like he's tall.
He's tall, right? He is tall. Yeah. It'd be a good hug.
I'd like to give him a hug.
So the case, and so the case revolves. Or at first, it was a little uncomfortable because it seemed like what we were trying to say was that this rape victim is a liar. And that is a very touchy subject to get into. Maybe she's making up the whole rape.
Ooh, yeah, I don't, pull I your don't collar. Care for Ooh. That. I don't care for that as a story. Like part of it was like, didn't Thurgood have a different case
another racism case we're going to look down here? But as more facts come to light, it all works out.
It all works out in this specific case. Really did dislike.
At first, it's very uncomfortable that is the angle we're going. Even though that's the default can't be, well, that woman's lying, but it's not like it has never happened. I mean, happens. But still, yes, you don't want to get into that. Yeah. But anyway, it goes other directions and it's fine. And it's a really really enjoyable courtroom drama as far as that goes, with the a lot of this work in the case, and Thurgood and Sam Freeman are going around looking at the crime scene and picking up evidence and everything. And the
only problem I would say is it has some similar standard beats for here's something set in the 40s that has to do with racism,
sure.
which is there's one scene of locals being upset with both Gad and Boswick's characters. Mm-hmm. So then they got to beat him up a little bit. But it's only one scene. And there's one scene where Gad's wife is kind of distraught, but then understands what is at stake with this case.
The scene of Thurgood's concerned wife on phone.
Right.
Calling him from back home. Always some of that.
And it just it has a lot of those familiar beats that won't separate it from everything. It doesn't make it bad. It just doesn't really push for something new and extreme.
Right.
Which,
right.
Yeah, that's life. And you're going to get movies like
those. Those are the standard biopic beats that are sort of put in place here to make it seem more like a biopic. And also, there's a scene where Thurgood is having drinks at a club with Langston Hughes. Who he knew. So little things like that are like, oh, biographical, that happened.
And it was like, Langston. Has anybody met Langston Hughes?
Right.
I believe that was how it went. By the way, did you count the F-bombs in this PG-13 movie?
You know I did.
How many you get?
Three of them.
Is that a record?
It's not a record, but they're all used in the literal verb sense, as opposed to just an exclamation. Like, they're all used in the, like, you know, as a verb, which... allegedly, according to the MPAA, even one of those gets you an R rating.
Hmm.
And this movie's got three of them, which is good. It shouldn't be rated R.
No,
but
it absolutely
the MPAA shouldn't have rules if they're not going to be consistent. They should probably just not have that rule because it's a dumb rule.
But yeah, like for me, the treat of this film is definitely the working of the case of Josh Gad feeling like he's in over his head, but then getting his sea legs in the courtroom and feeling pretty good about himself and slowly coming around to understanding like Thurgood Marshall's overall point as far as why this case is important,
right.
And what it could mean.
And the case comes down to the question of why on both the accuser and the accused, why would he lie and why would she lie? And that's what the case winds up hinging on, because both of them are lying about something and it's turning why. And I think that's really what gets thematically at what gets to the heart of the movie is what would make these people lie about these things and what it says about society.
As far as as far as technique goes, this is Reginald Hudlin, who's the director here.
Director of House Party and Boomerang.
That's right. And The Ladies Man. You know, some flashbacks don't work cinematically for me. There's some weird, like, kind of late, like, obviously it was on purpose, handheld moments that just looked a little wonky. The crafting of the film is less than for me.
The flashback scenes kind of, they remind me of like a CSI or one of those kind of shows.
Yes.
Whereas the cops are working the case, we'll see, I forget which show it is that actually does that. Maybe it's CSI that shows you the kind of the real flashbacks, or it shows you the way that they are imagining the flashbacks, which may or may not be the accurate truth. Yeah, it kind of doesn't work. And I kind of suspect that some of those were in there so that Kate Hudson wouldn't show up at the halfway point. So there'd be some glimpse of her before she testifies in court. One other thing that I looked up.
Go ahead.
The Josh Gad character in real life was not as timid. The article said that he at that point was already getting a reputation as kind of a flashy lawyer.
Oh.
The character dynamic works better, I guess, for him to be more timid. But one thing that is real was the scream with the gag over his mouth and the scream. That was for real. That really happened. An excellent moment in the film.
That's a little inside baseball if you end up seeing the movie.
A fine moment in the film. It's overall very good, respectable, enjoyable film. And then, you know, it ends and then there's several title cards that tell us all the amazing things Thurgood Marshall did the rest of his life. It's like, well, that I kind of want to see more about that.
But, there's a movie. Oh, there. Nope. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
Him on the Supreme Court, I think, would be fascinating. And arguing before the Supreme Court, all the cases, the landmark cases, that like the Topeka, the school board, the Separate But Equal.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lawyer behind that. That would, I think, be fascinating to watch. The movie kept reminding me of In the Heat of the Night, which we just recently watched. And I thought, and they're the same time period. And then I realized, nope, In the Heat of the Night was the late 60s in Mississippi. This was the early 40s in Connecticut. Yeah. But yeah, that's about equivalent.
Yeah, that is the same time period, I think, actually.
It still was about 1941 in Mississippi in 1967. I give Marshall, I really want to call it Thurgood. I give Marshall a B.
I give Marshall a 6 out of 10.
Here's a movie that we saw at Fantastic Fest. Hey, it's paying dividends already.
Good thing we went.
Good thing we went. And now it's in theaters. Y'all can see it. Professor Marsden and the Wonder Women.
Mmm.
You remember there was that movie Wonder Woman earlier this year.
Yep.
About Wonder Woman.
So if your kids like that, no.
That was a very good superhero origin story, and this is a superhero origins story.
It's a boat.
It is boats, yeah. And it's the story of the man, Professor Marsden, William Moulton Marsden, played by Luke Evans, who created Wonder Woman, and who also, by the way, invented the lie detector. Just FYI.
It is such a by the way in the film. I really thought like, this is going to be the majority of the movie. No, and it's like, wait, where did that go?
It's more, and it's fascinating, a very fascinating true story with how much is going on here, how much there really is. You could make a movie just about him creating Wonder Woman. You could make a movie just about inventing the lie detector. You could make a movie just about his relationship with his wife and research assistant. And this movie is all of those. But mostly it's the relationship, hence the title, Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman.
We're in two different timelines here. We're in 1945, where he's kind of...
he's defending himself to some prudes.
Right. About the comic book Wonder Woman.
That's a standard biopic trope, that we have the framing story where it's later on and the person we're dealing with is explaining himself. But most of it is, back in the...
Right, 1928, and then probably... I think it goes all the way
up into the 30s,
45, right?
Yeah.
And it is he and his wife work at...
Radcliffe College, which is Harvard for ladies.
Thank you very much.
His wife is Rebecca Hall.
And she deserves, but is a lady, so she's not a professor.
Right. He's a psychology professor.
Have you said this is Luke Evans?
Yes.
Okay.
And she's equally capable to him. They're both equally capable. Yeah.
Actually, say that again and then cut that chunk out because I'll talk about what I was going to say later.
And she is just as capable as he is, but again, because of sexism, doesn't get to have the degrees. And she's very outspoken. Her name's Elizabeth. Yeah, she's the first one in the movie who uses the F word. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Later on, she's not afraid to say cuss words like that. Later on, she whispers the word pornography. Says, William, this is pornography.
Fascinating. One of the best uses of a first F word in a movie.
For sure.
It was like, whoa, we are getting into some stuff here. Yeah, we are not going to skimp around issues. We are going to plow right through them.
And that's what this movie does. Let us know right off what sort of character she is and he is. And they have a very open and loving, very forward-thinking marriage, unjealous. And they work together
up until a point, right?
Although she says she's jealous of him professionally, but not sexually. She doesn't mind if he sleeps with somebody else, but not someone who's going to interfere with his work or whatever. Bella Heathcote plays young Olive, a grad student who becomes their research assistant.
Bella.
The three of them, with the theory that Marsden is working on in psychology, has to do with dominance and control and the way that relationships work in that way. And he's sort of figuring out the details of what this theory is. And it coincides with he and his wife and the research assistant all kind of falling in love with each other.
Yeah, it is a love triangle. And it's one that for me feels so utterly authentic and cared for in the hands of Angela Robinson, the director of this film.
She's the director of Herbie Fully Loaded. So you expect that kind of sensitivity.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I just assumed this is a TV director that hasn't had her chance yet.
It feels like a
and
very
Debs,
yeah. Feels like a natural, authentic relationship. And you call it a triangle, which it is geometrically is a triangle because there's three people involved, but there's not a lot of jealousy. For the most part, they make it work as a three-way relationship, a polyamorous relationship.
There's some moments of jealousy. There is some hardship in it, but you're right.
But it's not a triangle in the usual sense of...
It's not a triangle in the sense of secrecy.
Right.
I think that's the main difference.
Right. And most triangles, everyone's trying to narrow it down to just a two-way relationship. And this is a triangle where they're content for it to be.
Here's the thing. Most triangles are actually angles.
You've talked about that before.
This is an actual triangle.
Yes. But sure.
I know. But yeah, and it also grows in the sense of they become more honest with what they enjoy out of their sex life.
It's a very sex positive movie, as they say.
Very sex positive movie. Very nervous about neighbors, but comfortable with themselves.
I mean, you know how polyamorous relationships are viewed today. You can imagine how it went over during the Depression.
That's right. And we grow with them throughout the years, and there's children involved, and you see these wonderful nods to the future of Wonder Woman.
Because
the movie doesn't dwell on them. It tips its hat at them very nicely, in my opinion.
Yeah, because meanwhile, as they're having their relationship, they're working on what would become the lie detector, which involves their first version of it, involves putting a strap around the torso, around the arms of the torso, measuring systolic heart rate or something.
But it
looks like a bondage thing. They're sort of tied up there a little bit. And so you see, the Wonder Woman's magic lasso. And the whole bondage domination thing, they are kind of into that. And we see how the Wonder Woman comics involved a lot of tying people up. Lots of tying up in the Wonder Woman comics early on.
It was really cool to see the flashes of the original comic and what were included because
this
is all new to me. I wasn't that deep into Wonder Woman ever.
Yeah. Nobody was except Superman. I didn't really get all that either. But people at the time saw this as being sort of overly sexy, fetishistic. It's all this tying up and stuff. And then of course there the people's private lives too. It's interesting that the movie. The other thing is Marsden is a feminist. Like he wants his whole thing is he thinks that women would do a better job of running things. And he, as he's teaching his classes of women at Radcliffe College, he makes references, kind of joking references to what if women were in charge? And the girls in the class all titter and giggle because the very thought. And he knows that it's not feasible, but you also know that he truly does wish for that.
Right.
Like he was born a century too soon. His ideas. So it's pro women in that sense, and it's also a movie about sex, and it has a couple of scenes. One scene in particular that I would say is sexy. It's staged erotically, but it also is staged very. It's staged like something that's staged. It's stylish, almost mm-hmm. like the scene itself is aware that it's supposed to be the sexy scene of the movie. But there's no nudity in the film. There's no. It doesn't dwell on any of that. It's not prurient.
Yeah. Besides that scene, that is very lustful. Mm-hmm. There is a certain. Like, it does a really good job of having innocence about
fairly respectful and chaste. Yeah, because it's not about exploiting this scandalous three-way relationship. There's one thing that I think is a very good example is where the scene where Luke Evans has been in the nude and he's putting his pants on, and the camera stays from like his belly button up as he puts his pants on. Once he puts them on, the camera dips down a bit. To see the pants, it's like the camera was like respectfully averting its eyes from his crotch until he was covered up, and you get that sense of we're trying to be respectful here and not exploit the situation, but make it just as sexy as it needs to be to get the point across.
I'm curious if it's for most people. I'm curious if it'll come across as the right amount of titillation.
Yeah,
almost it is that. It just does such a really nice job of finding the proper line to be able to I know this is a weird thing to say, but like even saying I could recommend this movie to my parents.
Right.
Like things like that. It's just such a surprise considering the journey that you go on with these three characters.
And I think that's a lot of the movie's power and charm mm-hmm. is that it conveys these ideas of, love is love, and these people are happy, they're not hurting anybody, let them do what they want, but without it feeling controversial. It doesn't feel like it is trying to stir up or solve controversy. It's just trying to say, here's these people, and they had this, here was their relationship, and they did some great things, and, there you go.
Totally. And for me, this is the first time I'm going to remember Bella Heathcote. I'm sure I've seen her on the screen. Even though I have missed like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, 50 Shades Darker. I don't recall her in Not Fade Away. I don't recall her in Time. That's whatever.
Yeah, apparently I've seen her in like six movies, but I never really recognize her.
It's my favorite Bella. It's my favorite Luke Evans beating him as Gaston, which is, yes, a movie I liked, The Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
And... it's also my favorite Rebecca Hall beating the town and Christine.
Rebecca Hall, also terrific. Connie Britton is the prude that he's defending himself to later on.
It's fun to see because normally, nice to see her. And it's fun to see her not be a sweetheart.
Right, right.
Because that's normally all I can see when I see her.
Yeah, although even when she's a sweetheart, you also know from when she was Tammy Taylor that you don't want to get on the wrong side of her.
Oh, no, you don't want to mess
with
her.
She's a sweetheart.
Especially if she's had like two glasses of wine.
Oh,
she's
going
to get a little surly.
Don't whisper yell at me. This is really a terrific and entertaining and funny. And it's a biopic, but doesn't succumb to all of the tropes.
Yeah, it's really just that kind of like start in 45 and flashback. Mm-hmm. That's the main one that I felt.
A very fine film. And I give it a B+, Professor Marsden and or the Wonder Woman.
I give this a 9 out of 10. And if I'm allowed to call it a love triangle film, am I allowed?
I feel like that's misleading. Because of the usual a triangle, there's jealousy. Right. And it's more it's a polyamorous film. It's a film about an open marriage, polyamory. Is it your favorite polyamory film?
It's my favorite how do I say that word again?
Polyamory.
Polyamory. Polyamory. Polyamory.
Polyamory. You know what else this movie has?
Go on.
It has old-timey radio voice. Oh, the nudging.
Oh,
the nudging Jeff
goodness.
And I did to each other when the old-timey... It's during a montage. Huh.
This is the most nudging we've ever done in a movie.
Probably, yeah. Right? During a montage in like 1940 of Wonder Woman becoming successful, and they're playing one of the songs that's like your go-to 1940s songs. And yeah, it's a radio announcer. Oh, he's like, did I write down what he says? No, I didn't. But he's like, there's a new superhero is rising through the ranks, and get this, she's a girl.
It was kind of if you would have leaned in and said, I saved this as a surprise, that's me, I would have said, yep, that's you.
It did sound very much like my generic old-timer radio voice.
Not for one second would I have been like, how dare you lie about that? I would have been like, yep, nice. I'm all in, that's you.
Thank you, I'm honored. Next up, we got a battle of the sexes. The sexes being, in this case, male and female.
One played by Emma Stone, the other Steve Carell. One is Billie Jean King, the other Bobby Riggs. Now, Bobby Riggs is a cereal hustler, from what I understand. But
he sells cereal? Like out there going door-to-door selling cereal?
But I saw the movie and I didn't get that impression at all.
I think you're reading the plot summary on IMDb that describes him as serial hustler. That's what I think.
I mean, if you know a different way to spell serial.
This is Boats again. Ooh, three Boats movies in a row. And this is the Battle of the Sexes, 1973, when tennis pro Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King faced off. And this opened a couple weeks ago, and we were at Fantastic Fest, but now we've seen it, and we're going to tell you about it.
We're going to tell you how good it is.
This is directed by Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, the duo who made Little Miss Sunshine and Ruby Sparks.
How many people saw Ruby Sparks? It's good.
Yeah, it is good. I'm surprised that they have not made more movies. They direct a lot of music videos, including a lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers, which...
You're not holding against them.
I wouldn't put that on my resume if I were them, but whatever. Anyway, this is, I guess, their third movie. I thought they had made more movies. That's weird. They should make more movies.
They should make more movies.
And
this one starts with the old-fashioned logo from 20th Century Fox that you know they would have used in the 70s, and it very much is shot. Some of the stylistic choices feel very retro in a really cool way.
And Emma Stone is Billie Jean King, emerging as the best female tennis player. The issue is that she and what's her pal, Gladys, played by Sarah Silverman, they...
Such a charming, standard, buddy, like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I just loved Sarah Silverman in this.
She's very funny. And they are butting up against the U.S. Lawn Tennis Association, which consistently doesn't pay female players as much as male players. You got Bill Pullman there looking like Mitt Romney and his goon being just comically sexist, spouting
comically
off
the
list of, that's just biology. And they remind me of Anchorman sitting around talking about how bears are afraid of girls' periods and stuff.
Yeah. His character's name is Jack. Jack's whole stance is like, well, you're not as athletically gifted. Mm-hmm. And Billie Jean King's stance is, we're bringing in the same amount of ticket sales.
Yeah, men's and women's.
What she's doing is using logic,
right?
And he's an idiot.
He's saying things like men are more exciting to watch. That's a fact. That kind of thing. Yeah. And so,
and the best part is Bobby Riggs, kind of in the middle, really more like the soul of Steve. Man, does he just? I think he does a great job with this character. I think Emma Stone does a fantastic job as well, but. Steve Carell with this Bobby Riggs guy who was a really, really, really good professional tennis player. Won the U.S. Open, I think, once.
He's now at this point 55 years old, and he's on the senior tour? The senior – what does he do? Something somehow?
The senior tour. He's getting straps on the senior tour.
All right.
And he's constantly scheming, constantly trying to make a new business.
He's a gambling addict too.
Gambling addict. Gambling addict, and it's so amusing the way that he is a gambling addict with his friends, because he's trying to be reformed, but like, oh my gosh. And then he has one of the best speeches ever about, like, in the Gamblers Anonymous. Is that what gamblers
are? Oh yeah, right.
In that, like, when he stands up and does all that. Mm-hmm. And it really is a wonderful movie that is at times almost too sweet and too nice and verging on naive on occasion, in the sense of it just wants to show you the charm of standing firm to your beliefs, believing that women and men should be equal and viewed as equal, specifically in this case. And I ate it all up. I loved this movie.
It's also about Billie Jean King realizing that she is a lesbian.
Yes,
and
yes.
She kind of – it's her hairdresser or the woman doing hair for the women. Oh, we didn't say they start their they start their own women's league, own right. tournament, and get Virginia Slims to sponsor it. Anyway, their hairstylist, played by Andrea Riseborough, who's been in other stuff recently. She's in The Death of Stalin. That's right. The daughter of Stalin. She's a hairdresser, and Billie Jean kind of hooks up with her and become pals. Billie Jean is married to a man named Larry King. Not that Larry King. I was hoping it was going to be like 50-year-old Larry King. But no, somebody else.
Simply the nicest Larry King in the world.
Right. And so the movie is also about Billie Jean coming to accept herself and be who she is. I think her story, the movie focuses on her character development more than Bobby Riggs. Bobby is a more entertaining character maybe, but mm-hmm. he also doesn't really have an arc. Starts out as a clown, and he's still kind of a clown at the end. Self-proclaimed male chauvinist pig and all that. But it's fun. It's fun to see the rivalry going back and forth. It's fun when they get into full-on Battle of the Sexes mode, where Billie Jean is just like, I'm done talking, let's play. And Bobby's doing all his dumb publicity stunts and dressing up in silly costumes, just treating it all like a joke. And then, you know, the match happens, and I guess no spoilers. Sure.
If you don't know, I guess you should know. This was up until this point for many people, this is the most important tennis match. It really is. I remember,
as far as I'm concerned, it still is. Yes. Yeah. I mean,
this was 73. I got into tennis, I guess specifically maybe late 80s with Andre Agassi, Michael Chang. And she was a commentator, and I just remember always appreciating her and kind of hearing this story, and I'd see footage on occasion, mm-hmm. and it was important, and I knew it was important, and I knew I liked her, but I didn't get that full vibe, that full feeling that this movie really does for me. It fills in a lot of my feelings gaps with Billie Jean King, and I just think the world of this woman.
I believe Billie Jean King is the Billie Jean that Michael Jackson did not have an affair with in the famous song. This is the one that he was referring to. And his story checks out.
Nobody's ever said that the two of them have had an affair, so yes.
I think, yeah.
That does.
I believe
does
you, Michael. I believe you that Billie Jean was not your lover. That seems implausible to me that she would have been.
Almost naive parts that I'm referring to are like Alan Cumming and who's Alan Cumming's sidekick in this movie?
I don't know, but a couple of very, very flamboyantly gay costume designers. Yeah.
Like their lines are almost just too cute and too perfectly timed. And it's just like, really, they went along just they were there. Those two were real, like because it almost didn't feel real. But then also Fred Armisen shows up, and just because it's Fred Armisen, it's the weirdest character ever.
Well, yeah, he's one of Bobby's like health advocates with a bunch of vitamins and stuff. One of his kooky things he was into. Yeah,
and he doesn't do anything specifically crazy, but it's just Fred Armisen, so you're kind of waiting for a weird look or whatever.
He's there to add to the overall circus aspect of Bobby Riggs.
I saw this movie with my wife. She did not recognize Elizabeth Shue. Did you?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I give Battle of the Sexes a B+.
I give it a 9 out of 10. Battle of the Sexes is very enjoyable.
It's BS approved.
It's BS approved, and it fixed that whole sexism thing that was going on in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the story of how that all got straightened out. Now we got another movie that is in wide release this week that I saw. But Jeff didn't.
That's right.
So you're not allowed to talk about it since you didn't see it.
I'll have questions.
If I hear one word out of you, you'll be in contempt of court. The Foreigner is what it's called. Are you familiar with it? Have you ever seen a play called The Foreigner? It's a standard among community theater and colleges and whatnot. It's very famous. Anyway, I was hoping this was Jackie Chan in the film version of that. It's a goofy farce set at a hotel, and a foreigner shows up and mistaken identities and stuff. Very funny if it's done right. This is not that, unfortunately.
Do you know what the name of the book is that this is based
on? I'm going to tell you about this. See, it's called The Foreigner, and Jackie Chan plays a foreigner named Kwan Yok Min. He's I think it explains the movie that he's from China, but then moved to Vietnam. That's why he has a Vietnamese name, but he's Chinese nationality. And he's in London. And but nobody in the movie ever calls him the foreigner. They call him the Chinaman, as in that bloody Chinaman. And at some point in the movie, I thought, I bet this movie was originally called The Chinaman. And sure enough, it's based on a novel called The Chinaman from 1992. And it's hard to imagine why that title didn't survive the adaptation. But it is about Jackie Chan playing Quan in London. His daughter is killed in an IRA bombing, the Irish Republican Army. And it's the first such IRA attack in 19 years since the peace treaty or peace accord was signed. So it's big news that, oh, they're doing stuff again. That's bad. And Pierce Brosnan plays the, what do they call him, the deputy first minister over North Ireland. Himself formerly an IRA member, but he repented of that 30 years ago. And he, you know, still the IRA is still a thing that meets. They just don't do terrorist bombings. So he meets with them and is like, guys, who's doing this? Where'd this come from? But he says it all Irish. There's a very nice Irish accent in this. Pierce Brosnan does.
Nice. He's used that. I think he used that in a G-rated film once.
Sounds familiar.
It was in a G-rated film.
Sounds very good. Nice purring voice.
By the way, director here, Martin Campbell.
I know.
Did GoldenEye years ago.
I know. And Casino Royale.
But I mean, there's this Pierce Brosnan.
Right.
And GoldenEye.
And so he's saying, well, I don't know. We don't know who did it. And then Jackie Chan finds this guy, Liam Hennessy, Pierce Brosnan. He's like, I want names. I want the names of the guys who did this. And we realize, oh, he wants to do like a death wish, Charles Bronson thing. If the government can't find these killers, then I'll find them myself. And so he's doing that. And it's interesting. The movie is kind of the movie feels very much like two separate but connected stories. It feels like the main story is Liam Hennessy trying to find out who in the IRA is doing this. And is he telling the truth when he says that he doesn't know who did it? And does he secretly sympathize with the people who did the bombing or not? It's that. And then it's also this side story, like this tangent of this grieving father who will stop at nothing to get the guys who killed his daughter. And I haven't read the book, but reading about it, it seemed like the book was more about Quan, who turns out to be sort of this Rambo kind of figure with the kind of training and hiding in the woods and that kind of cat and mouse thing, you know.
Are we seeing some classic Jackie Chan stunts here?
There's a couple of fight scenes, not full on as crazy as in the old days, but still a couple of very good, you know, vintage Jackie Chan scenes. And then some fun stuff with him doing Rambo-y kind of things like, you know, planting booby traps and all that. But he's also gone from the movie for long stretches at a time as it focuses on the political side of Pierce Brosnan's character dealing with all his various people he's trying to deal with to try to find out who the killers are and trying to defend himself. Because what Jackie Chan will do is like show up and put a fuse in Liam Hennessy's car's gas tank, not to really blow it up, but to show them that he could have blown it up if he wanted to.
Oh,
things like that. And it's all about, I just want the names. I just want the names. He says, I don't have the names. And Jackie Chan does not care. He doesn't believe you. And it's good. It would have been a better movie if it had focused on one aspect or the other, either the grieving father getting revenge or the political mess of the IRA. The way that it puts them both together doesn't quite fully work all the time. But both parts of that are very good. Pierce Brosnan really is a very fiery performance, really likable and engaging here. And Jackie Chan it's the most serious thing he's done in a while. And this is his biggest on-screen role in a wide-release American film since The Karate Kid remake in 2010.
Yeah.
He's been voices a bunch, and we saw him briefly in Lego Ninjago movie in live action. But as far as like a major role, this is the first time in several years. And it's good to see him again, and he does really well with the more serious, dramatic kind of stuff. And it is fine. The Foreigner is a solid B. And you'll enjoy it if you enjoy those kinds of movies. You know, about bombings, revenge, vigilantes, Chinamen, all those. I was astonished that they kept calling him the Chinaman. Maybe
would have been too.
Maybe in London, maybe in England, that is still an okay word to use. Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, like the C word for women.
Yes. Or that it's less offensive or different context. I don't know. The Foreigner. And over on the DVDs, some new options this week. There's some good movies.
Really?
Well.
Oh, I saw one, but you know better than I.
That's true. About this and in general.
Yeah.
Baby Driver. Terrific.
You're so good. I can't wait to watch it a second time. Mm-hmm. Now that I've obsessed over the soundtrack.
Me too. Yes. If you haven't seen Baby Driver, you should do that. Also, The Beguiled. The Beguiled! Sound like a chicken. Beguiled!
This was good, right? This was it was good. Mm-hmm. This was some classy lady actors fighting over a man, right?
No, not fighting over a man. Kind of fighting. Well, sort of fighting over a man and then fighting against a man. But yeah, a wounded soldier shows up, Civil War era, in a girl's boarding house, and trouble ensues.
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman, Kirsten Dunst, Elle Fanning, Colin Farrell is the guy. Sofia Coppola directed it. And yes, that is worth seeing, The Beguiled. Particularly if you've seen the original, which had Clint Eastwood in 1971, I think. It's interesting, the differences between it. What else? Oh, The House. You never saw that, did you?
No, you told me not to.
Yeah, that sounds right. Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler. It's got Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler, and I gave it a C+. So, I mean, that's how bad it must be.
It's insane. It's insane.
It's like the cinema score grades. Like, if it's anything lower than a B, it means, oh, it must be terrible. And Wish Upon, which was a not very good PG-13 teen horror movie. But not.
Oh, wait, I saw Wish Upon.
That's right, you did see that. Yes, yes.
Oh, this movie's annoying as all heck.
You end up being more annoyed by the resolution than I was, I think. Was this the one?
This the is ending the one that if, it for you? If you watch it, if you start it, you have to say, you got to watch the whole thing, because that ending is,
That's right. but then also,
we laughed and laughed at that ending.
Another fine film that's out on DVD this week, or a Blu-ray.
Blu-ray
and DVD, I don't know. It's just the 30th anniversary edition, Planes, Trains, and or Automobiles.
One of the best dramas of all time.
Well,
it's got some funny parts too.
See, but
we don't have to do this.
No, we don't have to do this. Sorry. But here's the thing. Do you really mean it's one of the best dramas? Or do you really mean it's one of your favorite movies that happens to be a drama? Because the drama in this movie is not particularly good either. The drama in this movie doesn't make any sense.
What do you mean? It's hard to get home sometimes.
Yeah, but all like anytime, whenever when the movie wants us to feel genuine sympathy for John Candy, when it tries to pull the old John Hughes switcheroo of, oh, now we feel bad because Steve Martin's been a jerk the whole time. Doesn't work.
I just start crying.
Too sappy and stupid. No. But
no, it's so
when
good.
It's funny, it's very funny. And we have copies to give away.
We got two copies to give
what?
Away to people. Who wants it? Who wants it?
And are these the DVD, Blu-ray? What is it? We should find out what we're giving away.
This is most definitely Blu-ray.
This is the Blu-ray. Is there a DVD copy as part of it?
Blu-ray and DVD. You're getting both.
Since we have two copies, we'll give one away to an agent and one to a regular person, a chip or a chump, whatever we call you, who aren't agents. So, if you are interested in one of these copies, send us an email. What's our email address, Jeff?
MovieBSPDX@gmail.com.
Yes, send an email, tell us you're interested in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and indicate whether you are an agent or not, so we can separate the piles of entries. And
he wants to make sure there's a fine line between the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's what Eric wants to do.
Between the choose-to-have and the choose-to-have-nots.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the choice here. Nobody's making you be a chump or a chip.
Yeah, you could be an agent.
Mm-hmm. It's very easy.
I know people that would like you to do that.
So yeah, let us know if you want to copy that, and we'll give a couple copies away. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, courtesy of Paramount, right? Yeah, Paramount. Paramount. Thank you, Paramount. And that brings us to the end of the show.
We did it.
Let's recap. Marshall, what about Marshall?
it's good.
Uh-huh.
But it's not great.
Not great, no.
It's good. It's good.
Well, he's third good Marshall, not third great Marshall.
That's right.
To be fair. Battle of the Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman. We liked that.
Oh, yes. That's very good.
BS approved. And then kind of similar, many similar themes as far as accepting yourself and coming out and unorthodox relationships and whatnot. Battle of the Sexes.
It's fantastic.
Also BS approved. And The Foreigner is good. Good, solid sort of action thriller. Political thing. And that's it. So until next week, for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric B. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thank you for listening and good day.
I said good day.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.